Je rappelle simplement que M. Elie Franco, que tous les spécialistes de boudologie connaissent, est professeur à l'université de Leipzig. Voilà.
Thank you very much. And let me begin like... Let me begin, like all the other speakers, by thanking the organizers for this kind and honorable invitation, Lynn and Sylvia and Monsieur Robert. Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be back in Paris after several years. Now, one of the questions that the organizers have put on their conception of the conference, and which I found very interesting and which inspired me for the talk today, is the following one. How can one render the peculiarities of Indian textual tradition and the singular history they underwent through the centuries? And I thought that a very nice illustration of this question will be reflected in a well-known discussion in the Buddhist epistemological tradition concerning the order of chapters in the Pramanavatika. It may seem like a small problem of just order of chapters, but as you will see, the answer to this question has important implications and ramifications for the understanding of one of the greatest works in Buddhist philosophy, in the Buddhist tradition. And so I think it is really worthwhile. Now let me see the problem first. What is the problem? We have the basic text, the Pramana Samuchaya, which seems to run in a reasonable order, let's say natural order. It starts with an initial verse and then deals with perception, which is often the first pramana to be dealt with, the most basic one, then inference for oneself, which is inference properly speaking, and then inference for another, which is basically the communication of inference to another person, and then three more chapters, one on example and pseudo-examples, apoha, which has to do with the theory of language or philosophy of language, and then false objections that may lead to defeat in debate. Now, there is another text which is supposed to be a commentary on this, but it goes with apparently strange order. It begins with inference for oneself, then initial verse, then perception, then inference for another, and the other three chapters are not commented at all. Yeah. Now, both the Buddhist tradition and the and modern scholarships have dealt with this peculiar order, and we can contrast the different approaches, if you like, different philological approaches to this problem. Interestingly, it's the Buddhist tradition which seems to be more philological, if we take philology in the sense that Shelley Pollock suggested yesterday. It's the Buddhist tradition which suggests one author, one meaning, one coherent interpretation, whereas the modern scholarship, as presented by Frau Wallner and practically everybody else who followed Frau Wallner, actually breaks down the text into two parts which do not really fit very well with each other. Furthermore, we see a great variety of interpretation of individual solutions within the Buddhist tradition, whereas modern scholarship, I have to say, has been surprisingly unified in following Frau Wallner for the last 6 years, except for very few gentle remarks by Gnoli, who edited the Pramanavartika Svavritti. I don't know of anyone who ever even questioned Frau Wallner's hypothesis as presented in his famous wonderful paper, Die Reihenfolge und Entstehung der Werke Dharmakirtis. As you see from the date, it's been some 60 years already. If I can go back, yes. So, what is Frau Wallner's solution to this problem? He begins by saying that actually Inference for Oneself, this chapter, does not really deal with inference, but rather deals with reason. And that, well, to make a long story short, basically what he says is that Dhammakirti wrote this first as an independent work, which it's a treatise on reason, yeah, and then started to write his commentary on the Pramanavartika, which then goes in the normal direction. First initial verse, that is comments on the initial verse, then perception. Then he did not do the inference for another, because it would have meant a lot of repetition. Moved to inference for himself was not repeated, then moved to inference for another. The whole work became too large, too extensive. He did not enjoy the success he expected, become somehow bitter, and decided to stop the work, and then move to different series of work, Pramana Vinishchaya, where he presents his own theory in a more succinct and systematic manner. And slowly he becomes more and more successful, has a few students, then he produces the Nyaya Bindu, which is, if you like, the Reader's Digest version of the Pramana Vinishchaya for his students. That is, that shows that he has a few students already. And then, towards the end of his life, he goes back in the Hetu Bindu, then he goes back to the subject of his youth. And finally, to Vada Nyaya, he deals with some parts that have to do with public debate, which he left out in other cases. So this is the explanation of Frau Wallner, which is based, as I say, on a psychological and a personal development, which is really characteristic also for his entire approach, for one of the greatest concern of Frau Wallner writing about Indian philosophy was to individualize Indian philosophy and to make Indian philosophers, if you like, as attractive as the Greek philosophers. Unlike the Greek tradition, where you can grasp and you have the individual personality of the philosophers, in the Indian tradition, this aspect is often lacking. So much for Frau Wallner. As you could expect, most of the Indian commentators, or the Buddhist commentators who dealt with this problem, they looked at the Pramanavartika not as a product of two different works patched together, but rather as one coherent work, and they tried to explain the systematicity behind this rather strange structure. And to that I will come in the end of my talk, except for Yamari, so far one of the greatest intellectuals of the Buddhist tradition, who has been completely unknown so far, and now we are in the process of editing his work for the first time. But that will be the end of the talk, and there you see that with Yamari, actually this dichotomy between the Buddhist tradition and modern scholarship actually breaks down in a very nice manner, except that he will, let's say, if we follow Yamari, we will put Frau Wallner on its head. So let me first of all mention, you see all the important commentator and philosophers of the Buddhist tradition have dealt with this problem. First of all, I wanted to mention Dhammakirti too, because Dhammakirti is silent on this problem, and silence is also a kind of comment, if you like, even though we are not sure how to interpret the silent, but it's important to say that Dhammakirti is completely silent on the structure of the Pramanavartika, unless I'm mistaken. Then there is Devendra Budhi, who was Dhammakirti's personal disciple, Shakya Budhi, who was personal disciple of Devendra Budhi, Prajnakara Gupta, the greatest commentator of the Pramanavartika, and then the latest commentary, direct commentary of Pramanavartika by Manu Ratanandin, and finally two sub-commentaries that are really not well known so far, one by Jayanta, one by Yamari, on the Pramanavartika Alankara of Prajnakaragupta. Each one of these individuals has dealt explicitly, as I said, except Dhammakirti, each one of these individuals has dealt explicitly with the problem of the, let's say, the problem of the order of chapters in the Pramanavartika. Now, let me summarize the results so far of the research by others. I'm by far not the first one who deals with this problem. Basically, the traditional commentaries, you can divide them, you can understand their position according to two parameters. First of all, what is the mula? That is not obvious either. So the mula could be either the Pramanavartika is a commentary on the Pramana Samuchaya, or the Pramanavartika is a commentary on the Tripitaka, that is on the Buddha's word, not on the Pramana Samuchaya, or on both. Yeah. On the order of chapters, there were actually suggested either, as I showed to you, inference is the first chapter, or there were also suggestions to change the order of the chapters into the right order, the natural order that one would expect. And we see how the different philosophers are can be divided. That is, the Vendrabuddhi says first chapter on inference, and that the Pramana Samuchaya, Pramanavartika is a commentary on Pramana Samuchaya. Shakyabuddhi has two alternative interpretations. One, if in the first he follows the Vendrabuddhi, in the second he says no, actually the Pramanavartika is a commentary both on the Pramana Samuchaya and on the Buddha's word, Pravachana or Tripitaka. And then we have those who would tend to change the order into the natural order, say natural order in quotation marks, of course. Prajnakaragupta, he's very, very brief on this point, so we are not quite sure what he says, and then Manoratanandin, and then Jayanta. And as you see here, Yamari is absent in this interpretation, because so far Yamari has been completely incomprehensible. As you see, for instance, an able specialist of Buddhist philosophy like Birgit Kellner, who dealt specifically with this subject, he says she deals really with everybody except with Yamari, who says the Tibetan translation is just too difficult to deal with, even though I must add the Tibetan translation was done by the greatest Tibetan translator of all times, that is Loden Sherab Noklotsava. Nevertheless, it is indeed largely incomprehensible. So, a short break for commercials. This is the time to praise our own project in Leipzig. We have, all of you must have heard of the sensational Sanskrit manuscript that have been photocopied in Lhasa and brought to Tibet. Our institute in Leipzig was able, similarly as the institute in Vienna, was able to sign a memorandum of understanding with the Tibetan Center in Beijing, and as a result of that, we've been granted access to several manuscripts, and the latest one is indeed a very extensive manuscript of Yamari on the first chapter, on the Pramana Siddhi chapter of Pramanavartika Alankara, and which is now in the process of being edited with great difficulties and great joy in our institute. Okay, so far for the commercials. Let's see what is the Vendrabuddhi's explanation. Most of the discussion is actually in Tibetan, but fortunately we also have a few fragments. So what you see here in italics is a fragment. We can be pretty sure about the wording of this fragment. So. How does the Vendrabuddhi explain the fact that inference is being dealt first? That is because inference, anumana, is a precondition, nibandana, for the explanation. I see that I translated this, so I don't have to translate it again. So, having established inference, which is a precondition for the explanation of the treatise on the characteristic of pramana, that is the pramana samuchaya, of course, by the teacher, that is Dignaga, then Dhammakirti begins the explanation of the salutation verse. So the Dhammakirti begins with a discussion of inference, because before he can really start commenting, he needs to establish inference for the examination of the characteristics of the means of knowledge. So in fact, it's not that the order of chapters is really different, but that we need this precondition. If you like to look at this, this is basically what Devendra Buddhi is saying. No? We have, first of all, a prolegomenon, and then we have initial verse, perception, and so on, so that the order of chapters between the mula and the commentaries are falling in place. Yeah? So this is Devendra Buddhi, as I said, a personal disciple of, or at least according to the tradition. Now, Shakyabuddhi, as I mentioned before, there's two different interpretations. And the first interpretation, he follows Devendra Buddhi, what I just mentioned now. In the second interpretation, however, he explains Shastra differently. Shastra is, the Lakshana Shastra is Tripitaka, that is the Buddha's word, or if you like, Pramana Lakshana Shastra is the Bhagavat Pravachana. So the Pramana Vartika is not at all, Pramana Vartika is also, if you like, a commentary on the Buddha's word, not only on the Pramana Samuchaya. So if we take this interpretation, try to put it schematically, what we get is also not unreasonable interpretation. That is, we have first chapter, we have on commentary on Pramana Samuchaya, which is indeed a precondition for the entire discussion. And the second chapter, the Pramana Siddhi chapter, is indeed a commentary on the Buddha's word. And if you are familiar with the content of this chapter, you will know, of course, that it has very little to do with Dignaga. I mean, it only uses Dignaga's initial verse as an opportunity to establish the authority of the Buddha against the authority of the Veda, and then to discuss what is the Buddha's teaching, a very extensive discussion on the Four Noble Truths, and so on and so on. So that from the point of view of content, it is indeed not unreasonable at all to say that Pramana Vartika's second chapter is an interpretation of the Buddhist tradition of the Buddha's word. Now, Jayanta. Yeah. So far, Jayanta have been extremely difficult to interpret, because again, the Sanskrit has not survived. But the Yamari's text is also very important for us to reconstruct the position of Jayanta, because Jayanta is often being criticized by. I'm talking, of course, about the Buddhist Jayanta, not the Nayayika Jayanta. And again, here, we have Jayanta's opinion referred to here as Kechit, yeah. And Jayanta explains that we need, before we start. Actually, Jayanta is the first we know who suggested. I mean, we know for sure who suggested to reverse the order of chapter and start with the Pramana Siddhi, that is, with the general discussion of validity. And indeed, before we start anything, we need a Samanya Lakshana, we need a general definition or general characteristics of the means of knowledge in order to show that the Veda and so on are not valid. Yeah. And the first chapter, that is the Pramana Siddhi chapter here, yeah, has the purpose of stating the characteristics in general of the means of knowledge. Samanya Lakshana Vidana Artham Pratama Paricedaha. Yeah. And furthermore, he says this is indeed the most natural order, that is, after establishing the general characteristics, he connects this discussion to the qualities of the Buddha. The Buddha is perfect in cause and perfect in effect, and to be perfect in effect means that he has accomplished his own purposes as well as the purposes of others. And then he connects the perfection in one's own purposes to pratyaksha, to perception, so that after establishing the general definition, one should go to the self-perception of his own purpose, that is pratyaksha. After that, anumana, that is inference, depends on perception, so that should be treated next. And once we have anumana, we can we can communicate the result of our inference to somebody else, and that will be the perfection. That will be the perfection in the purpose of others, because you communicate the result of your reasoning to somebody else. And this is indeed the natural order. And what could one really? What could be criticized in such an order? No, tad asyam anupurvyam. Kutacho di avatara. There's absolutely nothing to criticize in this order. So far for Jayanta. And now we come to the plat de resistance, which is... Before that, some other commentators, we don't know who they are. They are they are anonymous, but they speak after Jayanta, and they support Jayanta's opinion. They say that Devendra Budhi and others were mistaken in respect to the order of chapters, and it's a mistake to say that that Acharya, that is Dharmakirti, commented on inference first. Yeah? And now I'm coming finally to my, if you like, to my main hero today, that is Yamari. No, first of all, there is a long discussion denying this new order of chapter. Here you have one of the nicer arguments, which is also typical to the idiomatic way that that Yamari uses Sanskrit. He says, really, we know for centuries that what the order of the Pramanavatika is, and trying to find arguments against it, it would be like somebody trying to block the sun, the light of the sun, with the palm of your hand. It will just not work. We know that the real order is, first of all, anumana, and then the others. So it's a joke, he says. It's a hasa. It's like a joke trying to block the sun's disk with the palm of your hand. I will skip here, since there's not much time. I will skip here all the negative arguments criticizing Jayanta and come straight to what is Yamari's own interpretation, that is what he suggests. And you will see here, I think we are here for a few interesting surprises. So what is the paramartha? What is the final interpretation? And you see here that just like Frauwanne, in a way, Yamari also considers the Pramanavartika to be an incomplete work. He's also considering psychological factors when it comes to Dharmakirti, but we'll see that it has a different twist in the end. Okay, so first of all, yeah, Acharya Devendra Budhi, yeah, did not study with Dharmakirti. As I said, Devendra Budhi is supposed to be the personal disciple of Dharmakirti. But he did not study the Pramanavartika directly, but rather in relation to Dignaga. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Apitu Dignage, you have to read. No? It's in relation to Dignaga. Yeah? And it's only for this reason that Devendra Budhi became a follower of Dharmakirti. Yeah? It's only for this tad artam eva acharyam asa anushita. Yeah? And Dharmakirti had a propensity or a special clinging or special attachment to Dignaga and was referring to Dignaga often in his commentary on the Buddha's word, but in fact with often relating his own commentary to Dignaga. Note here the interesting term abhinivesha. Yeah? Dhammakirti had this abhinivesha, which is an abhidhamic term, and it's a negative term, it's a pejorative term. It means clinging or having a strong attachment, often unreasonable attachment, often accompanied with false conceptual constructions and so on. It's not at all a respectful term, this abhinivesha that Dhammakirti has. No? And so Dhammakirti explained, and due to this propensity or this abhinivesha of Dhammakirti, Devendra Buddhi also got this, yeah, and had a special mental formation, samskara vishesham, we'd say some kind of a deformation professionnelle, because too much clinging to Dignaga is happening all the time, which is diverting us actually from the true sense of the Vartika. Yeah, so he got Devendra Buddhi too, as a result of that, got this samskara vishesham adijagama. Yeah, and yeah, because of this Dignaga abhinivesham, both of them, both Dhammakirti and Dignaga became too attached to, sorry, what did I say? Both Dhammakirti and Devendra Buddhi became too attached to Dignaga. Okay. Now, after a while, Devendra Buddhi became a little bit conceited, yeah, and he thought that he could explain the Pramana Vartika with independently, without Upadesha. Yeah? Upadesha anapeksha bodhabhimanam. No? So having this conceptual construction and having seen in various places in the Pramana Vartika, stanastanani, various passages which remove Dignaga's mistakes, yeah? And he determined falsely, yeah, that the Pramana Vartika is about Dignaga. Tad vartikatvam eva nischitya, but wrongly, it's not about Dignaga. And not only that, he dared compose, after having all these mistaken misunderstandings and so, he dared compose his own work, no? Grantakaranam utsehe, which is the Pramana Vartika Panjika. Okay. Now, what about Dhammakirti at that time? Yeah? Dhammakirti was old, Jarasa, and his energies or his capacities were impaired, upahata shaktina. And because he was old, he neglected to compose the commentary on the other chapters. As you remember, only the first chapter, the Anumana chapter, has a commentary. You know? But now, because of old age, capacities or energies being impaired, yeah, shesha abhyasa karanam is being neglected, yeah? And even worse, he was lazy, alasyam evacha, he was really lazy, especially about the sampradaya, that is, about the transmission of his work, his ideas, to his disciple, yeah? So the Devendra Buddhi did not really get the sampradaya from lazy Dhammakirti, alasyam evacharitam. That's not the end of it. Then, what was he thinking? No? What was he thinking? He was thinking as following. Yeah? He said, this will do. Yeah, this will do. Yeah. As far as the general proof of the pramanas that we accept, that will become somehow clear from the general course, mukhya kramena of the work, yeah, and the fact that we have an additional superimposition that my work is a vartika on Dignaga, that doesn't do so much harm, nabadaka, yeah, even though it's not true, it's aropa, yeah, it's a superimposition and it's additional, but this additional false dimension of my work does not impair things. Yeah? Concerning Yeah, concerning the deeper things, which most people, most students, Rotaraha, will not understand. When they come to a point of non-understanding, they will make the Buddha into Pramana anyway. So we can leave it at that. If there is somebody who is particularly intelligent, with Prajna Atishaya Chali, then he will understand the final meaning, no? Paramartha Bodha, that he will also understand. So because of this, there's not much harm that we have this additional superimposition on the Pramana Vatika. Yeah? So therefore, because Devendra Buddhi did not get the Sampradaya, he was wrong about the idea, about the scope, or about the subject matter of the Pramana Vatika. Or, if we don't want that, we can say that even this is not a mistake, Avramapi, it's Dhammakirti himself, who connects the Pramana Vatika to Dignaga because of this Dignaga Abhinivesha, because of his special clinging to Dignaga. But there is no mistake, there's no such mistake in respect to the order of chapter, no? The Pariceda Anupurvyam. All the more so, as these chapters are transmitted in writing, no? Likhita Sancharita. So you cannot have a mistake about the order of chapters. And moreover, the chapters themselves are called with ordinal numbers? In fact, the chapters themselves are called first chapter, second chapter, and so on. So you cannot have a mistake about what's the first chapter or the second chapter, and so on. And the fact that this order of the Pramana Vatika does not correspond well with Dignaga's Pramana Samuchaya, that's okay. That's not a problem. So it is established. The order of chapter is just as it's been well known for a long time. And it is original of Dhammakirti. It is Vartika Kariya, this order of chapter. And he says, what I cannot bring here, that he will bring further arguments or further proofs in his introduction to the other chapters. I must say that unfortunately we have Yamari's text only for the Pramanasiddhi chapter. We don't have a Sanskrit text for the other chapters. So what does this tell us about Dhammakirti? Please ignore the first danda, it's a typo. I bring you here the second half of this famous so-called bitter verse in the beginning of the Pramana Vatika, which I translate. Therefore, because people are jealous and have no interest in things well said, that I bring that from the previous half verse, although I believe that this work will not be useful for others, no, na para upakara, my mind attachment to repeating what is well said has grown for a long time, no, chiram, and thus has become addicted to it. And now the question which I would like to address to you is this verse composed by a very young man who just started his career, as Frau Wallner wanted, or is this verse composed by an old man, tired, somehow less successful than he expected to be? In any case, this will be, I think, an interpretation which will challenge modern scholarships in the next few decades, perhaps. We can, I think, now having read this rather extensive interpretation, I think we can no longer take for granted, as everybody did, Frau Wallner's interpretation. One more small point. Having read that, then I recall that, in fact, the Tibetan tradition is very much in agreement, and Bhutan says that after composing the seven works, the last work of Dhammakirti is the Svavritti. So the Tibetan tradition actually accords with what we see here to be Jayanta's interpretation. finally, I have the very pleasant duty, or not duty, the very wish to thank my my co-workers in the Yamari project in Leipzig, that is Junji Chu, Wei Shi Li, and Hiroko Matsuoka, who is also here somewhere, I think. Yes, she's here. She could tell you more about Yamari, and we are, as I said, we all work very hard, very diligently on this project of making the first edition of this text available for the first time. Also thanking the German Research Council, DFG, who finances the Junji Chu and Li Huixie, and the Bukyo Dendo Kyokai, who finances Hiroko Matsuoka. And thank you very much for your attention.